John Williams here with your friend and mine, Dawn Jackson Blattner, America's favorite nutritionist and dietitian. You can find her at DawnJacksonBlattner.com. And on Instagram, she's DJ Blattner. Hi, Dawn. How are you?
Well, hello. My favorite time of the week. My favorite radio host. Nice to be chatting with you.
Well, I could hang up now and have had a good week. Listen to this. Hey, John Williams. The Dawn Jackson Blattner segment each week is my favorite on your show. And now please ask her this question, and on it goes. But I think a lot of people look forward to your cheerful but also well-informed information, Dawn.
Well, hey, you know what? Thank you. I really do appreciate good science, but we don't have to make it boring. I mean, we can have a good time. Same thing with food. I mean, there's lots of good science about how to eat well, but you also have to add a little joy to it, I mean, in order to do it. So thank you.
You know, and I always say Dawn will make you feel good about the food you eat, because I think that if you're trying to lose weight, or if you're just trying to be healthy and as nutritious as you can, and who isn't, criticizing people or holding the dire consequences of their bad habits over their head maybe isn't as effective as just encouraging them and steering them to positive options. That seems to be your vibe.
Well, it is. And I mean, there really is a reason for that, and it's because it works. People, when you think about it, like if a kid was going to a math class and came home with a bad grade and all you did was berate the kid and be like, you're stupid, you're never going to be good at math, why don't you just think about this and do better? That kid hates math and actually doesn't do better in math. And, you know, it's not helpful. So I don't know why we become adults and we think we have to motivate ourselves with negativity. It
yeah.
does not work.
Well,
actually, the opposite is true. Positivity motivates us to have better habits.
Maybe because some of us saw that when we were kids. I know the story of I know a woman who, when she was in high school, was not, I would say, overweight. She wasn't thin. Her mother was. But her mother offered her a cash reward if she would lose X amount of pounds. What do you think of that?
You know, it's an unfortunate thing when we are trying to motivate with anything outside of ourselves, because it's not lasting. You know, so there's only so many vacations you're going to have. There's only so many dollars you can win in a bet like that. You know, the thing is it works for that short period of time, but it isn't that internal thing of like, oh my gosh, I feel great and I want to keep doing this because I feel good. And that is that internal motivator is the long lasting one.
Do you think though that the number on the scale is the best indicator of your overall health? Is it true that some people will carry more weight than others? They might look better if they were thinner, but their health isn't compromised because they're 10 or 15 pounds overweight. What do you make of that, Dawn?
Oh, man, this is something I really believe in big, is that the scale, we have to remember, is a box of springs. And all it's measuring is your organs, your bones, your brain. Yes, it's also measuring muscle and fat. That number is so rudimentary. It's so crude. It tells us absolutely nothing about our actual health. There are many people who get on the scale and love the number and say, oh my gosh, I love this. And their insides are rotting, you know? And there are many people who get on the scale and it's not a number they like, but yet they have beautiful cholesterol numbers. They have wonderful blood sugars. And so I encourage everybody, we've talked about this before, but the metabolic five is what I would much rather people look at besides a actual scale. And the metabolic five is actually waist circumference. Where you carry your weight matters. If you carry it around your waist, that's near a lot of your organs. And so that's a more dangerous place to hold it. So waist circumference, blood pressure, blood glucose, triglycerides, and our HDL or our good cholesterol. Knowing those five numbers can really be so much more impactful to understand how healthy you actually are.
I wrote those down. Waist circumference, blood pressure, triglycerides, your HDL. What was the fifth one?
Fasting glucose.
Fasting
and so, you know,
glucose.
Yes. And there are, you know, targets for all of these things. Like for waist circumference, for women, it's 35 inches or less. And for men, it's 40 inches or less. For blood pressure, it's around 120 over 80 or less. For your fasting glucose, it's about 100. For your triglycerides, it's usually less than 150. For HDL cholesterol, it's usually 50 for women and 40 for men. Now, the idea here is that, you know, you start learning these numbers, having these conversations with your doctor and saying, you know, hey, what are my five numbers?
Yeah.
You know, are they good?
Yeah.
You know, are they borderline? You know, because the thing is that we really do have to take charge of our health, and we can do that by having conversations with our doctor about these five numbers.
You want to talk about sleep. Let me just ask you this question. If you've got a question for Dawn, 312-981-7200. We've been in the habit lately of buying bunches of grapes. Brenda puts them on a bowl in the kitchen there, and every now and then I'll graze by them and eat some grapes. And then later on I'll eat some more, and then sometimes I'll have this or that. I sometimes graze during the day. But I think like I'm grazing on good foods generally. Here's my question. Do you care if I eat throughout the day? Do you want me to eat them like three squares in a day? Or is it okay as long as the good food is, what it doesn't matter in what order or how often you put it in you?
Well, okay, so timing probably does matter, especially as we get older. That eating these three meals a day allows us to have likely more balance than when we are just grazing throughout the day. Tends to be snacking isn't as high in protein, isn't always having whole grains, doesn't always have the vegetables and good fats with it.
Yeah.
So when you sit down and have those three meals, you're more likely to get the 30 grams of protein you need to help stimulate muscle protein synthesis. As we age, we really need to get it all at once at that meal to really wake our muscles up and say, oh my gosh, you know, this guy is having protein. It's more likely that you're going to have higher fiber foods at a meal than if you're grazing. So the ideal situation is that you're having three balanced meals, and then you're having those snacks like you are having, fruits and vegetables and that kind of stuff ready at hand. Like, I love that insight in mouth. Whatever you have in front of your face is what you're going to want to eat. So the fact that you have, you know, bowls of fruit out is genius, because that's what you're going to do. Actually, over the holidays, I had a bunch of like leftover, like cookies and cakes and all sorts of stuff that were at my house. And I just put them off to the side on the kitchen counter, and I was always eating them. And I was like, wow, I can't believe how many of these things I'm eating. I was like, what's going on here? I was like, oh, if you see them, you will eat them. So I put them away where I couldn't see them. And guess what? Naturally, you eat less of them. So I love what you're doing. If you want to eat it, put it out in the open.
30 grams of protein. What does that look like? What do I have to eat to get to 30 grams?
Okay, so let's give you just a general, like chicken, beef, or fish. Generally, 1 ounce of a meat like that is 7 grams of protein. So if you're looking for 30, that's about 4 ounces of meat. That's not very much of meat or chicken or fish. That's about 4 ounces, which is, you know, tiny compared to most people
so
eating,
is that,
you know,
like a chicken breast? A chicken breast,
yeah,
would be that.
Yes, sometimes chicken breasts are double that. Like, so it could be like the size of your palm of your hand is oftentimes like a 4 ounce piece.
Oh,
or if you really want to know, like you, when you buy, say for example, chicken in the store, you can see, oh, I'm buying, you know, this is 16 ounces or this is 1 pound.
Yeah.
And then you say, oh, there's 4 chicken breasts in there. Okay, I see each one is 4 ounces. So you can kind of do the math to get a feel for what 4 ounces looks like. But yeah, that's about 30 grams of protein just from that one. But then all foods have different amounts. Like, you know, an egg has 6 or 7 grams, or Greek yogurt might have 15 grams for 3/4 of a cup. So the meat is a general guideline of 4 ounces, but then other foods have different quantities to add up your protein.
So 2 eggs would get me to around 12 of the 30. You are interested in sleep today. Why are you concerned about that?
Well, you know what? I got to tell you, it's the foundation of a lot of stuff. Anytime I talk to clients, they say, oh my gosh, I feel too tired to exercise. Oh my gosh, I feel too tired to make a balanced dinner at night. You know, I feel too tired. We're in a real energy crisis in this country. It's actually one of the top things that people report is low energy as being a problem in their life. And one of the best ways to get more energy is to actually sleep and get quality sleep, because that's where human beings recharge, right? So just like we plug in our phone to recharge, we've got to sleep to recharge. And so there are things we can do to sleep better. And sleep better means that you are getting to sleep quicker, that you are staying asleep longer. And these are an important, factors in energy for doing healthy things in your life, fun things in your life. So I came across a study of 5,000 people, okay? And they started looking at what these people were eating and their sleep quality. So this is association study of like, okay, what are they doing to sleep bad or what are they doing to sleep well? And so here is, this is so interesting.
Okay, wait. Hold on, I'm going to take a break. You come back with that, all right?
Okay, sure.
All right, so you want to get a better night's rest. Here comes five good ideas from Dawn. Dawn Jackson Blattner is joining us to talk about five things she's learned about our sleep. Is that a fair way to put it, Dawn?
I mean, it's very, very close. There's four things, actually, that I have learned from this research study. And here's what they are, okay? If you want to sleep longer, there were two things these 5,000 people in the study were eating that made them sleep longer. You want to guess or you want me to just come out and tell you?
Well, knowing you, one of them would be beans.
Actually, you're right. Thanks, John, for that. Actually, it's fiber, which, of course, beans are the top front runner in the fiber category, and protein. When people were eating a protein-rich and fiber-rich diet, they were able to fall asleep quicker, they were able to stay asleep without waking up, and they were able to actually sleep even longer. So their quality of sleep was amazing when their protein and fiber in their diet was good. Okay, and then these were the two things that the people who reported the worst sleep were eating. Mm-hmm. The worst sleepers had a diet that was high in fat and high in sodium. That, I mean, I find that to be so interesting that, you know, a lot of times we know sodium and blood pressure, but this study is actually saying, hey, you want to try and have better sleep? Watch your sodium levels. And particularly the people who had the actual worst sleep, not only had high sodium levels, and we've talked about foods that are high in sodium before. They're called the salty six, and that's bread and rolls, pizza, sandwiches, lunch meat, soup, and then burritos and tacos are on that list too.
So basically everything.
All these salty foods, but they also had very low potassium, meaning they had low fruits and vegetables in their diet. So I have never read something where it's so clearly associated that if you want sleep, changing these factors, trying to watch fat and sodium and trying to make sure you have enough protein and fiber can really help people sleep. So then I dug into this study and I was like, well, like how much are these people eating? Like you have to eat, how much? So for the protein category of people who were eating enough protein to have a good night's sleep, they were eating about 20% of their calories coming from protein. So if you do the math on that, most of us are probably eating or trying to eat about 2,000 calories a day. Some people less, some people more, but about 2,000 calories a day. So if you're getting 20% of that, that ends up being 100 grams of protein a day. These people who had the best sleep were doing, which is interesting because 100 sounds like a lot. And that, oh my God, what is happening? Well, break that up, divide it by three meals. And now you've got that 30 grams per meal with a little extra for snacks. So you're 30, 30, 30 is 90. You got 10 extra for having a little yogurt or something like that for a snack during your day. So those people were eating about 100 grams of protein a day. And then their fiber was pretty shocking. The people with low fiber had like only 3 grams a day. I mean, I don't even know how you could eat such low fiber. So low fiber. But the people who were sleeping well were only eating about 15 grams of fiber a day. Some of them were eating much more. But what to me that says is, wow, we don't have to eat that much more fiber to get good results. So if you could just look at your day and say, look at your breakfast and say, oh, is there any way that I could add a little bit of fiber here? What would you do? Oh, maybe you could add some raspberries, a half of a cup of raspberries. That's not barely any. It's 4 grams of fiber. So you have a little raspberries in your morning. Then you go to your lunch and you say, gosh, is there anything I could do here to have more fiber? It's like, oh, maybe swap your bread to whole grain bread so you're getting more fiber. Instead of 1 gram a slice, maybe it's 4 or 5 grams a slice.
Right.
At dinner time, you know, if you say, oh my gosh, you look at my dinner, you're having steak, add a little black beans to it. You're having ground chicken, add a little bit of lentils to that. Have some beans added to your meal. You don't have to only eat beans. You can add them and you will get benefits like this study is saying. I mean, beyond even sleep, you know, better digestion, better immunity, better fullness, blah, blah, blah. But I just thought that was so cool. They don't have to eat that much more fiber to get the results.
I have other questions for you, but I'm really glad you did that. I was taking notes. Let me ask you some questions from our listeners. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Are there benefits to drinking apple cider vinegar?
Yes, actually. They're not magical, as people will say. But if you did 1 tablespoon in 8 ounces of water, you want to dilute it because it's very hard on your tooth enamel if you don't dilute it. It's very hard on your esophagus tissue if you don't dilute it. But 1 tablespoon in 8 ounces of water, whether that's before meals, or even first thing when you wake up in the morning, has been shown to ever so slightly help with appetite and blood sugar control. I mean, it's not magic, but it does have a little bit of truth to it.
Dawn, what do I do about my sugar cravings and feeling hungry? What can you recommend to minimize sugar cravings?
Okay, well, you know, the whole talk, the world is talking about GLP-1 and this appetite hormone, okay? What is very, very cool is that we actually have a lot of control of through our diet of making our own appetite hormones, making our own GLP-1. And so one of the absolute first things, we just talked about it with sleep, but eating foods regularly with fiber. So things like oats and chia seeds and beans, no joke, actually help us
really
produce better appetite hormones. Yes. The other thing is, oh, shocking, we just talked about it, protein. So protein not only helps with sleep like we talked about, but when you have enough protein through your day, it balances blood sugar, which also balances cravings. So why don't you, you don't have to count your protein for your whole life, but in the next 7 days, why don't you just add it up and start seeing like, oh my gosh, my breakfast is only 6 grams of protein. What could I do here? Oh, I could add a Greek yogurt. Oh, you know, my lunch is only, you know, 10 grams of protein. What can I do here? Oh, I'll add some cottage cheese. You start thinking about how to alternate fiber and protein.
Right.
Foods. So those are huge. And then the, you know, other thing when it just comes to sugar cravings is actually eat quality sugar like you do with your grapes, for example, that a lot of times people are not eating the 2 cups of fruit that they need to. And your body does crave sugar. It uses it for brain power, muscle power. It's wonderful for us as long as we're getting it from natural places more than added sugar places. So make sure you're getting your 2 cups of fruit a day in addition to a lot of fiber and protein. And we can manage our appetites.
Hey, Dawn, because of your discussion about chia seeds and flax, we've added them to our diet. I buy the whole flax and then I grind them up. Somebody else said, does Dawn approve of protein drinks to get protein?
Yeah, okay. So first of all, congratulations on the chia seeds and ground flax seeds. It's an added benefit of good fats and also lots of fiber. So those are very, very good to add. Now, when it comes to protein shakes, yes, I think a lot of us could use a little bit of help getting our, you know, 100 grams, give or take, in a day. However, the idea with these protein shakes is it's one part of a meal, right? So that would be, that's only your protein. So what are you having as your whole grain? What are you having as your fruit or vegetable? It needs to be rounded out. So that's why oftentimes I will tell people to make a protein shake because you can add spinach and frozen berries and flax seeds and get a lot of nutrition and put your protein powder in there. So the protein powder is, you know, not a whole food, but you're eating all these other good for you things. If you're just grabbing a protein shake that's already made, at least consider doing something like, you know, a little bowl of oatmeal with berries next
right,
to it
right.
So that you're rounding it out.
This listener says, I regularly hide food from myself. My husband laughs at me, but it really works. If I'm not seeing it, I'm much less likely to eat it. Dawn, give us the headline to this. A couple of listeners have texted in or called in and said they want to reduce belly fat. I've only got a few seconds left, but just in general, start us on a conversation about that. Give me something I can use.
Yes, the biggest things are twofold. One, it's most definitely muscle mass. Needing to lift weights is huge because it changes your body composition. So that's a huge one. And the other thing when it comes to meals is making sure meals are balanced for your blood sugar. So that means on your plate, you look at it. Is there a little bit of protein? Is there a little bit of whole grains? Is there a lot of fruits and vegetables? And is there a little bit of fat? Balanced meals balances blood sugars and makes it more likely that we have a healthy weight and in particular around our waist.
DawnJacksonBlattner.com, DJ Blattner on Instagram. You did it again, Dawn. Thank you very much for your help today.
Thanks for having me. Talk to you next week.